Our next speaker today is Jim Morris. Jim is a systems librarian background, implementing and supporting a wide variety of information technologies, including library systems, product literature and rights management, internet portals. Prior to working at AstraZeneca, Jim was a library systems manager at Bucknell University and product specialist at OCLC. I'm just going to give a quick anecdote that one of the things that stuck out for me when I first met Jim was, as a librarian, one of the first things he addressed to me was his mission that he was responsible for identification and implementation of biological taxonomies, which I thought was really fascinating in regards to the roles of an emerging roles of librarian. So with that, I'd like to turn over to Jim.
Thanks. Sorry, use this. Thank you. Well, I'm really relieved that Ed's talk turned out the way it did, where he said at the end, ontologies have a role to play. Because I was really worried I was going to have add a whole layer to my presentation to kind of get around that. But no, ontologies are good, and that's what I'm going to talk about. Semantics in the information professional, specifically linked data vocabulary management. And by linked data, I mean the language of the semantic web. And by vocabularies, I mean specifically controlled collections of terms and relationships between terms. So your taxonomies, ontologies. Ontologies is a tricky word, but taxonomies, vocabularies, thesauri, lists, anything like that. You know, we live in a linked world. That's nothing new. The World Wide Web is all around us. It's more than just a technology. And in order to survive today, you have to leverage that network of information. Of course, I know you've all heard of the internet, and that's not exactly what I'm referring to. It's more about the levels of control that are present in the web. In other words, there's very little control, and that's part of what's exciting about it. No one controls the web. And by the same token, we can't, in our businesses, we can't control all the information that we need to do our jobs. We can't proactively buy all the information we need. We can't download it. We can't certainly recreate it all inside in anticipation of possibly needing it. We've heard that theme a few times already. And we all know the role of vocabularies, you know, in this room especially, the role of taxonomies, thesauri, and the power they have in being able to find, organize, connect information. But guess what? We can't control them either. The vocabularies that we need to connect these different sources of information are out of our control. We can own some of them that refer to our own information, but there's vocabularies that connect the different data sets that come and go that we need from day to day. Those we may or may not have any control over. And that's what's really cool about the linked data technology and the semantic web. It's designed specifically to harness that open-endedness nature of the web, but it does it for data, and vocabularies are just a particular form of data. And what I really want to end with as we go through this presentation is I hope to inspire some of you guys to be interested in this field. How many people are... Is there anybody in the room besides me and Mary that belong to the taxonomy division of SLA? All right. A few hands. Fantastic. Well, this, Tim said I have a systems librarian background. Well, this is really exciting from a systems librarian background, from a taxonomy background, because it sits in between the information professional, someone who understands the content, and the technology that enables that content. So in this presentation, I'm going to briefly talk a little bit more about my background and how I got to this point in my profession dealing with linked data vocabularies, a little bit about AstraZeneca and the business climate that drove the creation of a project called the Semantic Framework at AstraZeneca that the vocabulary piece that I'm in charge of is a part of. And something I want to do that might be a little different is I want to take this kind of high level, that we've been seeing a lot of presentations of, and quickly dive down into a couple very specific examples using linked data technology with vocabularies. I think anybody with even a rudimentary understanding of vocabularies will get this and hopefully see the power of this approach for managing this type of information. So yes, yeah, systems librarian. I used to call myself that still until about a couple years ago. I had to eventually give that up. but I manage a lot of library systems. In fact, one of my earliest adventures into the world of taxonomies and thesauri was at OCLC when they owned a product called Basis Plus and TechLib. I worked on a module that took MARC authority records and published that information to the Basis Plus Thesaurus Manager. And it was really cool. I don't know if anybody ever used it. But it was a really great insight into the nature of the sophistication that goes into of these metadata standards and specifically for authority information and how it can be rendered in a thesaurus. How many people heard of Basis Plus? Besides Paul? Oh, look at all the people. Wonderful. It's still in use, at least in one organization in this room. I moved into more of an information architect role, managing a large amount of web content for the Global Library Organization. We had great, very robust content management processes, so it really gave me a picture of what it takes to manage enterprise content. And that got me in touch with enterprise taxonomies, so I became the R&D representative on the AstraZeneca taxonomy, enterprise taxonomy. And that really was my first experience actually working with a real taxonomy and all the challenges of trying to maintain that in this collaborative, cross-functional world. And since I was making such a big fuss about the taxonomy and how R&D needs to be more involved in the taxonomy and vocabularies, we needed to take this more seriously. My organization came to me and said, okay, Jim, you're so excited. Take on this R&D vocabulary challenge. And I had no idea what I was getting into. 30% of the time, I still don't know what I've gotten myself into. It is so complex, so many different vocabularies that need to be used across all these data sets. All those vendors out there in that room have their own vocabularies. And combined with all the vocabularies we created ourselves, it was a very complex picture. So I'm painting the business context here for our approach to managing vocabularies. AstraZeneca gives me all the information. This slide came from the slide pack that to give all presenters. And it has all the information I need in it. Health connects us all. It's all about connections. Combining skills and resources, working together with others, working closely with others. It's all saying we can't do it alone. We can't do it with our own information. We have to collaborate and connect with other information in order to be successful. All right, this is a fanciful slide that, based on this concept of the hyperconnected enterprise, which is a phrase that I picked up from a Gartner report a few years ago, and it really stuck with me, and really started to resonate with me as I started working with these enterprise and R&D vocabularies. So if we walk this through this, so in the beginning was the organization. You know, you have your company, you manage your information, everything works fine. But then you start to merge, you start to have other partners, the exchange of data between regulatory agencies becomes more sophisticated, and other partners appear, the ecosystem changes. Suddenly, you may not be the center player anymore. And it just keeps getting more and more complex. And so in the language of Gartner, ecosystems widen, complexity rises, coordination increases, and that's the key, coordinating. Coordination becomes more important than control. And we'll look at this picture again specifically regarding vocabularies. But that was the question. How are we going to, in this world of all these connections that are very hard to maintain, combine skills and resources, work together with others, all to achieve this common goal of improving health? And that was the driver behind the Semantic Framework Project. And that's about, and it was seen, the theme of that is to build a linked data architecture based on the semantic web principles that allows us to ask questions and solve business problems across a heterogeneous information landscape extending beyond the traditional boundaries of the enterprise. So it's really been a theme of this whole conference, I think. So vocabularies in this project, the Semantic Framework Project, is seen as a critical link. And what do we do with our vocabularies? And these vocabularies, again, could be a published vocabulary like MeSH or MEDRA or the NCI Thesaurus, or it could be a Thomson Reuters list of values from their data sets or a taxonomy from their values. It could be the Elsevier M-Tree Thesaurus or one of their many other vocabularies that they provide. But what we can do with those is add structure to unstructured text. So just blobs of text or even images, going through that, using text analytics and applying an ontology, a vocabulary, I should use that word, a controlled vocabulary against that repository, tag that content, actually tag it, physically tag it with some identifier for a particular concept that we're looking for. And you know, some of the content we're using already has structure. Medline already has structure, but it's not the structure we want. So we would add additional vocabulary information to semi-structured information. And of course, the challenge of connecting all this data from different places. So we need to understand the concepts used in different data sets. And by connecting the concepts, we connect the data. And of course, you know, none of this is easy. And one of the points I'm going to come back with again and again is that you know, the semantic web and this technology doesn't make it any easier to map vocabularies together. That's still a very challenging activity. What it does is it gives you a way to model it, and it gives you a sustainable, extensible way to model it. You're missing out on some of my very cool animations. For some reason, this version of PowerPoint, some of these slides have the dots like floating around, so just imagine that. So let's look at the hyperconnected enterprise again, but with a vocabulary perspective. In the beginning was the enterprise. We, the enterprise, have one enterprise taxonomy. It models our organization, our view of the world. We've got one content management system that uses the one taxonomy. We've got a collaboration system that uses the taxonomy. And as long as we can get people to use it, everything is fine. But it gets more complicated. You merge with another company. One of the first things I did at AstraZeneca was work on a project to integrate three product literature databases. That was seen as a very important thing. We got three product literature databases, so we connected them all together. They all, of course, had their own independent taxonomies, thesauri. And what did we do? We created a new one, of course. Which, that's what you did back then. What else? What other way was could happen? The argument of, oh, we should just use a published vocabulary. Well, you still want to model AstraZeneca's view of the world. So adding an entire vocabulary, there's arguments against not adding all of MeSH as your vocabulary. And that's the power of the semantic web, which we'll get to, is it allows you to do that. Use the published vocabulary, but you can extend it without corrupting it. So this keeps going on, and that's just merging three product literature databases. As you know, as the ecosystem keeps broadening, suppliers come and go, there needs to be a new approach. So We're in the Semantic Framework project. We have a work stream looking specifically at vocabularies. And I think some of this language that I came up with was in an email to Tim, because we were writing back and forth about vocabularies. And I actually kind of synthesized the whole vision in this dialogue that I had with Tim. But it's really about a vocabulary network. We have this network of data sources. Well, we need a network of vocabularies to enable interoperability and query expansion across these different structured and unstructured data sets. The network also implies that the vocabularies can be rapidly adopted from whatever source they may be in, reused, mapped together, versioned, using a standardized, extensible technology across the board. Some basic principles. We don't create a vocabulary one already exists. It's such a temptation because it's too hard to reuse these vocabularies. They're all in different formats. It's easier to create our own again instead of reusing it. We have to stop doing that. And we can extend vocabularies once we reuse them. You know, for example, if we have you have an internal data set and you want to look at it across, you want to see what Medline or PubMed articles relate to it. So you need to look at the data set internally, what concepts are used to describe that data, and see how that information maps to Mesh. So you have a version of Mesh that includes extensions that relate to specifically to your business issue. But we don't corrupt the authority. That's one of the big challenges we keep running into. Before the Semantic Framework project, AstraZeneca in R&D had a big program to create a set of vocabularies to pull all information from multiple data sets together. It was a fantastic project and incredibly ambitious. And we created this vocabulary with the audacious name of universal disease, U disease. And it just, one of the phrases that William Hayes used yesterday really caught my attention. If you're trying to create these gigantic amalgamations of data or vocabularies, it's a little bit megalomaniacal to think that you can create this gigantic universal disease vocabulary. I remember somebody joined the company a couple years ago, and he heard about this universal disease vocabulary, and his first word was, "Oh no, not another disease vocabulary. There really are enough already." Now, here's the trick: we want to get them from authoritative sources, but are they in a format that we can use them in? That's a big challenge, and that's my challenge to the vendors out there. When we start talking about the specific data format of the semantic web, that's the format that we need them in. That is the standard. That is the emerging standard for managing vocabularies. And what do we do with these vocabularies? As we talked about mapping between the two of them, the power of doing that to connect data sets, slicing them, these customized versions of vocabularies for specific business purposes, managing the versions of these vocabularies as they come in, converting them, because as I said, a lot of suppliers don't provide them in this native format, so we need to be an expert in converting them. And this network of vocabularies is very complicated, so we need a sophisticated, a new way to inventory that type of data, that type of collection. So here's where we get to the fun stuff. I'm going to give you a 10-15 minute introduction to the semantic web, and specifically the vocabulary, the ontology, the standard of the semantic web called SCOS. How many people have heard of SCOS? It's a very simple data framework for vocabularies. If you're familiar with vocabularies, this data framework called SCOS is very simple, so we'll talk specifically about that. But first, the semantic web linked data. It's been mentioned a lot, but I don't know how many people have had just the basics introductions to it. It's a web of data, not pages. Very simple. All the World Wide Web really is a web of pages. It's there. You have a page. It has a unique identifier. And then you can link from that page to other things through that unique identifier. So it's a connection of pages. We know that. But the semantic web takes that exact same concept and applies it to data. And as Ed in the last talk said, this gets a little out of control. I mean, to get people to use this technology to identify their data according to these standards is a huge challenge, which is why I want to focus just on vocabularies, this much smaller, already well-controlled set of data. So just like every page in the World Wide Web has an address, everything in the semantic web has an address. So you might be looking for a happy hour tonight at a local Society Hill bar and find the Tattooed Mom's homepage over on South Street. And you go to the location, the address for the Tattooed Mom. You read down and it says, happy hour is from Monday through Friday, 4 to 7. So I can read that, I compute it in my head, and I know that I now know a fact. But in the semantic web, the Tattooed Mom would not just have a page, but it itself, as a thing in the real world, would have an identity. So you can see the challenge of trying to get everything in the world to have a unique identifier. And then you connect things. So with the web of pages, things are connected through these hyperlinks. In the web of data, things are connected through this fundamental construct called RDF. And that's just the most fundamental structure you can apply to any relationship or thing in the real world. Subject, predicate, object. I am a member of SLA. The Tattooed Mom is a bar. Now, ontologies, this is a tricky word because it took me a long time to get around this, so I hope I can save you some time. When I was big, all hyped up on taxonomies and managing all that stuff, I thought, oh, great, the semantic web, it's all about ontologies, fantastic, that's what I'm all about. Well, the semantic web use of the word ontologies is a bit more abstract. And yes, all these controlled vocabularies that we're talking about are ontologies. But ontologies are a little more at a level of like identifying that a bar is a type of restaurant. A restaurant has hours of operation, so it's that things about data. So then you can take your basic statement that the Tattooed Mom is a bar. And because there's an ontology layered on top of it, you know that the Tattooed Mom has opening and closing hours because of that ontology that is informing that data. So it's a web of things, of data. Vocabularies, as a thing in the real world, are part of this picture as well. So vocabularies are things. The things in vocabularies, we'll call them concepts. Concepts are things. And what's the second rule of the semantic web? Things have unique identifiers. So every concept in a vocabulary has a unique identifier. And by unique, I don't mean unique in your particular database. I mean unique to the world. And you say, well, how is that possible? Well, the same way we assign unique identifiers to web pages. How is that possible? Well, there's a standard. It's called a URL. And we use that same standard for identifying unique, for assigning unique identifiers to concepts. And what else? What else is a vocabulary? It's not just the concepts. It's the properties of the concepts and the relationships between the concepts. So again, a subject, predicate, object. So you might have bladder cancer as a subject, has a preferred term, P, predicate, of bladder cancer. So the concept of bladder cancer, which we may identify some other way, has a label called bladder cancer. The concept of bladder cancer also has a synonym of cancer of the bladder. So it's just that construct, just everything you know already know about vocabularies. Concepts have relationships, they have definitions, they have relationship to other concepts. It's all mapped out in the subject, predicate, object model. And SCOS, which stands for Simple Knowledge Organization Systems, I love these names. But you see how they got around the whole challenge of these big debates about whether it's a vocabulary, a taxonomy, or a thesaurus? It's called something completely different. It's a knowledge organization system. That's what it is. So SCOS is specifically designed to help model vocabularies. Just a couple more slides of this gruesome detail. These are just the essential properties of SCOS. And these are shorthand descriptions of what these properties are. These properties themselves have unique identifiers in the web. And this is just a shorthand description of it. So there's identifying that bladder cancer is a concept. Well, there's the SCOS concept. Identifying that bladder cancer has a preferred label. Well, that's the SCOS preferred label. Identifying that bladder cancer has synonyms, well, that's SCOS alt label. So you would say bladder cancer, SCOS alt label, cancer bladder. And you have definitions. And then within the tree, taxonomies are all fancily structured. That's where you just assign these other terms of broader, narrower, related. Bladder cancer has a broader term of cancer. It's really not more complicated than that. The real power comes in these last ones, the matching relationships. That's where you can say this concept, bladder cancer in vocabulary A, is the same concept as bladder neoplasms in this vocabulary. And there you start to get the mapping. I'm going to dig very deeply into the mapping challenge. We mentioned all the capabilities of mapping, slicing, versioning. We're going to look specifically at mapping two vocabularies using this language. Subject, predicate, object. Everything breaks down into that triple, they call it. So there's the identifier for the NCI thesaurus concept of bladder neoplasms. That's an actual real identifier, and you can see it looks just like a web address. And we shorthand it by using that NCIT abbreviation and the code. So the NCI concept is a concept. Easy. NCI thesaurus C2901 has a preferred label of bladder neoplasms. It has synonyms. Alt label could be anything. You can have sub-properties of these. So if it's an acronym, synonym, used for, you know, whatever terminology you want to use. But they're all bubble up to the alt label. So it has a synonym of tumor of bladder and, of course, many other synonyms, definitions. It has multiple broader terms. Let's jump over to mesh. I'm using these two vocabularies, NCI thesaurus and mesh, just because it's a good example. Imagine this with any two data sets, any three data sets, any four, whatever many data sets that you need to connect together using the concepts that are in those data sets. It's the same principles. So mesh, in traditional classic mesh parlance, urinary bladder neoplasms is the term for bladder cancer. That's an identifier that I used for it. It's a concept. It has a preferred label, urinary bladder neoplasms. It has synonyms. One of them is cancer of bladder, and it's got definitions. It's got multiple parents, all the things that taxonomies have always had. This is just encoding it in a standard, web-friendly, extensible way. Now, if you take note of this, well, you can't tell from these slides, but if you look at the full MeSH records and NCI thesaurus records, you'll find that tumor of bladder is not a synonym in MeSH as it is in NCI thesaurus, and cancer of bladder is not a synonym in the NCI thesaurus. Trivial example, maybe text analytics could get around that just by looking for phrases, but just to take that example to its conclusion, suppose you want a very rich set of synonyms. I mean, what do you need to do with both of these vocabularies? You might have two very carefully indexed vocabularies using these two different thesauruses, and you want to connect them up. Well, you need to look at how those concepts relate to each other. Or you might need just a very rich synonym set. So let's go find the disease vocabularies that have very rich synonyms and pull them all together, because we may not know exactly what data set we're going to use. That universal megalomaniacal universal disease vocabulary, that took vocabularies from all these different data sets, including from both of those vendors out in that room, and pulled them together in this big mashup of vocabulary so that it could be used to search across any repositories we may happen to need. We're still doing that, but we're doing it in a way that can be maintained and without corrupting the original sources, so we can manage versions more effectively and so forth. So what does this look like? This is the killer slide. This is the highlight of the presentation. First of all, we have to make one declaration that bladder neoplasms in the NCI thesaurus is the same concept as urinary bladder neoplasms in MeSH. So somehow we have to make that determination. That still needs to be done by some, in some clever way. But what's great about this is you can go so much far beyond that. Suppose we want to merge those synonyms together. I didn't talk about Sparkle. Sparkle is just a language that's used to manipulate the semantic web. Again, it's a standard. It's not complicated. So don't worry about this if you're not familiar with it. And if you are familiar with it, don't look too closely because it's missing. It's not exactly correct syntax. But what this is doing, let me go over here. You're matching patterns. That's what you do in the semantic web when you do queries. You match patterns. You're looking for these triples or a whole connected set of triples. And you're saying, is there a pattern here? And if there is, I want to do something about it. So in this case, that where statement, it's saying, find me all the patterns that match something, SCOS exact match, something else. I don't need to search for any of those either concepts. I'm looking for that pattern. And when you find that pattern, the next step is saying, take me all the labels, the preferred labels, alternate labels, out of one vocabulary and infer that they can be synonyms, alternate labels in the first vocabulary. So with that one statement, it's going to go through all the vocabularies, look for that association, that pattern, and build this much richer synonym set. So what you end up with is this. The NCI thesaurus still has its same preferred label, but it has these additional alternate labels that have been inferred. And I keep using that word very deliberately because we don't have to change the NCI thesaurus to do this. We don't have to create yet another thesaurus to do this. All we need to do is write that rule. And depending on what you need for computing this information, you can just on the fly make that association and get these information together. You may need to cache it in order for, to speed up processing. But you don't need to change the sources. And that's the key message. And this is just for mapping. But the Elsevier person yesterday said, he had that pyramid. I don't know how many people are on that side of the room, but we had the pyramid, and we had all the unstructured, messy data down at the bottom. We had the more structured data that we've applied structure to using vocabularies like this, and then we have knowledge and wisdom and all that up on the top. And he said, what the trick is, you've got to add more intelligence to that middle layer. Well, that rule right there is the intelligence. A human, or some deliberate process, identified that those two concepts are the same. And then we wrote that rule, and the computer can do the reasoning to say that if these concepts are the same, then all their synonyms are the same. This is not new to taxonomy management and vocabulary management, but what's new is it's doing it in this standardized way. There's been no standardized global vocabulary framework for managing vocabularies like this. Now there is. So that's just vocabulary mapping. So you can imagine how this would work with the other core capabilities we're looking at. Slicing it. Suppose I don't want all of Mesh. I just want the diseases that I care about for my project. But I don't want to create yet another list of diseases. So you just add some additional information. You don't add it to the thesaurus, the original thesaurus. You just amend this information that says that concept, because these are unique identifiers, I can say that concept is something I care about. This concept is of interest to AstraZeneca, so forth. And then you can use that same query language to build these subsets of vocabularies that are of specific value to a particular project or indexing exercise, whatever. One of the big challenges is getting vocabularies in this native format. So one of our core capabilities is still we've got to do a lot of conversions, and I hate that because you do end up starting to make it copies. What we want is these vocabularies from authoritative sources delivered in native format. And at least we can start to do that internally with our vocabularies. I'm going to skip over this. So I hope that in this little adventure from looking at gigantic bubble diagrams of the hyperconnected enterprise and the drivers for coming up with a new approach to deal with this networked universe of interconnected information and how vocabularies are part of that picture of connecting all those dots, and that vocabularies themselves are a network that need to be managed in a new way. And that new way is using linked data principles from the semantic web and that specific vocabulary called SCOS. Because that's the challenge, that these vocabularies aren't always available in this format. I give credit to Elsevier. I know all their vocabularies are available in SCOS, at least a lot of them. I can't speak for Thomson Reuters or other companies. The challenge to us is this field is still dominated by techies. I was afraid I was going to start referring to the 47% of informaticians or something out here, and I don't want... Now, the informaticians are going to tell you this, but there's a lot of informatician-dominated field, a lot of computer science people that can write Python and other scripts like that, and that's true. I hope what I've given you a picture of is just a little peek at this technology behind the semantic web management of vocabularies is not that complicated. And if you understand the basics, you can talk to those application developers. You can say, this is why this is important. And if they start dealing with a semantic web, I know that. I have important information that can be part of your semantic web framework. And it leverages all the skills that we already have as librarians and information scientists. It just uses them in a way that is really relevant to today's world. And, you guys have all the understanding of the information sources. That's one of the real challenges. People want to connect all these data sets, and they just care about connecting them. It takes one of us to say, well, what exactly is in that data set? What is the scope of it? You're trying to connect these things. You're trying to connect two drug concepts, but you don't even know what language that database uses. That takes our understanding of those sources and the business value of the different sources to make those connections work. So that's it. Just wanted to acknowledge my vocabulary services team and some of the people that are on the Semantic Framework project. And we use software from Top Quadrant, so they've been really helpful in us in forging this and forming this vision, as well as a consultant known as Dean Alamang. I'll leave this slide up. It's just a set of references that I'd recommend if you're interested in learning more about the details of the semantic web, especially that first book by Dean Alamang. It's the most readable, the first three chapters anyway, the most readable introduction to the semantic web that I've seen. I really highly recommend it. Thank you.
And do we have any questions? Lovely. Go walk this way. Decisions.
Jim, thanks very much for this. I actually feel like I finally am starting to understand this. So my question to you is practical applications. Do you have anything to show yet that...
Hello.
One of the first projects that we dived into was looking at clinical trial data and pulling in clinical trial data from every source that we could possibly find and then applying a disease ontology to it. We used the human disease ontology. It's a great example because it's very strictly a disease vocabulary. It doesn't have things like headache because it's not a disease. So we wanted to use that because of its very rich disease modeling, but we needed to add things like headache. We didn't modify the source vocabulary. We pulled in concepts from Medra to amend that vocabulary. It's tricky. Where exactly does a concept like headache go in a hierarchy? That other example of combining an internal drug or compound database with a published source requires a very rich drug vocabulary. We're actually trying to find a source, following our principles, where is an authoritative source of drug vocabularies that covers the scope of the question we're asking. So it involves what is the scope of these two data sets they're trying to connect? So understanding that and say, do they need chemical identifiers? Okay, no, but they do need project numbers, perhaps, going through generic names and brand names, of course. But understanding that scope and then finding a vocabulary and from a published source, I think we used Thomson Reuters source for that. And it's not available in SCOS, as far as I know, so we had to read it into our internal vocabulary system to be able to deliver it. So it's new. We have a lot of... work to do to develop these capabilities. We're not experts in any of those, mapping, slicing, dicing, versioning. We've gotten to the point where we recognize that's really the only way to do it. If we go backwards to writing Perl scripts to integrate text all over together in some unsustainable way, it'll be just one-off exercises with nothing to build on. And so it's really, we're at the position where we're saying, look at what we've been able to do so far just with, test servers and some training classes in this. Now we need to really ramp up our capabilities to be able to do this in an effective way. And that's where we are. And the more people that are saying the same thing, we'll move forward.
I think we have one more question.
Yep. I see two hands in the back.
Okay.
There's one over there.
So actually, I don't so much have a question. I just want to double check that I've understood what's been said, which is as a person who helps the organization by purchasing content, this SCOS layer comes along with the vocabulary and is maintained by the vocabulary owner when we license it. That's what we should be looking for when we license in vocabularies. True?
Yes, that would be asking for what we want.
No, but is that true, or is it
Is it done independently or by the source? That's a good question, because if you've ever seen the linked data cloud, I think someone maybe William throw that up on the page. You know, all the data sets that can magically be connected by the semantic web, some of them look like vocabularies, you know, mesh and RX norm and all these valuable vocabularies. So, oh, great, problem solved. All we need is pull this information. Then you go and look at them. Well, no, actually, that RX norm semantic web, that was a project by somebody in Vermont or something a couple years ago. It's from version 3 years back. It has a special disclaimer, do not use this, warning. So it got to the point where they could demonstrate what they were doing, and it got into the great big linked data cloud and makes everybody really excited. But it's not from the source. And it's this. And another thing that these suppliers of vocabularies can do, that if they get on the bandwagon with the semantic web, and that's great, so they want to deliver their vocabularies into RDF, so that's a big step. But they don't use SCOS. They model it in another more open-ended ontology of the semantic web. And they're not modeling terms. SCOS is just terms and relationships, concepts. They're modeling diseases and real things, and they make it really complicated, and it's as complicated as starting from scratch. It's better than that. So a lot of vocabularies, like NCI Thesaurus, is available in RDF. So it's available in semantic web format, but I still have to convert it somehow to use it in a very simple way. It's getting too much detail, but at least when it's in RDF, the semantic web is extensible. It's like one of the key phrases to remember about it. I can take any RDF structured vocabulary, and if I understand it, I can create a SCOS version of it without corrupting it, just adding additional properties to how it works and creating those rules. So okay. RDF is good. SCOS would solve all our problems. And I think one of the things that, you know, librarians, especially special librarians, who I think have a great, you know, bullshit meter, can... Bullshit meter for you out in the TV land. to identify when things are getting too complex. They say, well, oh, geez, we're modeling these. Well, we got to model this really sophisticated way. No, all I need are terms. All I need are terms, alternate terms, descriptions, and relationships between terms. That's all I need to solve this particular business problem. Don't make it too complex. That's what's so great about SCOS. It's simple. The key word, S, simple.
Okay, let's take a question here.
This has been fascinating, and I've learned a lot. I wish I'd known some of this. A couple of years ago, I was involved in creating a taxonomy for AAAS across all scientific disciplines. It was a bigger project than I had realized when I started it, but my question really relates to multidisciplinary and cross-disciplinary terminology. When you have a field like environmental sciences that involves chemistry and biology and physics, and how do these tools take advantage, make it possible to relate these cross-disciplinary and multidisciplinary concepts, even though they are from vastly different vocabularies?
Absolutely, yeah, and that's one of the issues with my example is it was talking about just disease vocabularies. But yeah, you can map between two vocabularies. You can use those matching relationships. They don't have to be a match. They could just be a relationship. So it could be this drug affects this target. So you could have a drug vocabulary and a target vocabulary and draw those relationships you know, using some of the techniques that have been already spoken about, like analyzing literature for specific assertions that say this drug has some impact on this target. You can take that out, and it's triple. And then you can assign that to your two drug and your drug and target vocabulary and say, now these concepts have some type of relationship between them, and you can start applying that to other problems.